Hello and welcome to another episode of Forum GovTech Europe, the podcast that fosters the debate on the relationship between government and technology in Europe and beyond. I'm your host Simon, and today I'm talking to Dr. Keegan McBride. Keegan is a postdoctoral researcher at the Hertie School's Center for Digital Governance. He completed his Master of Science in e-governance technologies and services and his PhD in technology governance at Tallinn University of Technology in Estonia. His primary research interests are related to open government data and its use for the co-creation of public services. Outside of his primary research interest, Keegan has published on topics such as small state digitization, artificial intelligence in public administration, big data analytics, and digital government more broadly. He previously served as the manager of the GovAI Lab at Tallinn University of Technology, the chief technical developer of Estonia's open government data portal, and worked as a consultant for the OECD's Office for Public Sector Innovation on the technical aspects of AI in the public sector. We talked about his work at the Center for Digital Governance, the uses of AI in the public sector, and why Germany's state structures might actually be quite interesting in terms of digitizing the state. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and now without further ado, my conversation with Keegan. Hello and welcome to another episode of Forum GovTech Europe, the podcast that fosters the debate on the relationship between government and technology in Europe and beyond. Hello, Keegan. Thank you very much for being here today. You're currently working as researcher for the Hertie School's Center for Digital Governance, specializing on the use of open data and approaches to improve public services. Could you give us some insights in your academic journey and how you ended up working in digital governance?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on the podcast, Simon. I'm happy to be here and excited to be able to talk a little bit about, you know, my experience and my journey and my understanding of digital governance, digital government, digitalization, you know, all of these sort of similar yet slightly different topics. If you want to talk sort of specifically about how I got into digital governance and my academic journey, it's a bit odd. I started actually during my bachelor's as a chemical engineering student, but decided I didn't like it so much. So I switched degrees, started to study political science and international relations. And then as part of that, I did a study abroad in Estonia back in 2013. I sort of fell in love with the country, came back to the States and worked as a research assistant and for the university I went to, which was Montana State University. And I was working a lot with community and economic development. And as part of this, I was doing a bit of work with, you know, helping local government set up websites, very, very basic, but, you know, very sort of, you know, simple. But this was my first experience with digitalization. And there, you know, it was much different because we would work with a town of, you know, 70 people. And the person in charge was just doing it because they were retired and bored. And the, you know, so it was a lot of effort to sort of have people, you know, get engaged with it and walking through them, the technical complexities and all these different sorts of things. But it was definitely a rewarding experience. And I would say that this is where my interest started with digital governance. And this was my sort of first experience with it. I can toss it back to you.
All right, interesting. And you completed your PhD in Estonia as well and worked there in e-government as well as for the Estonian Open Government Data Portal. Could you tell us a bit about your work there and what your work in Estonia entailed?
Yeah, so I guess I will also sort of bridge my answer to this one with the previous question. I came to Estonia to do my master's in e-government technologies and services. And during that time, I sort of taught myself how to program and started working for one startup, which is sort of international and famous. Now I don't need to go into details, but this was my first experience with sort of coding, so to say. Not the best, but I learned a bit and I taught myself a bit. And so I have some understanding of how these things work. And anyways, after my first year there, I started working for a professor in the Department of Public Administration on one project that had to do with co-creation and open government data and creating services from open government data. Because I had the sort of public administration background, but I also had, you know, the technical knowledge on how to do different development and different computer science and these different sorts of things. Then I got involved with them, and I worked on this project throughout my rest of my master's and throughout the rest of my PhD was based around this topic. But anyways, during my PhD, I helped with a few different things. So I was the chief technical consultant for the Estonian Open Government Data Portal. Basically, one foundation, Open Knowledge Estonia, won a procurement to revitalize the Estonian open government data ecosystem. And my role in that was to help rebuild the portal and help to handle the sort of technical changes involved in all this. Other work that I've done there has been with the GovAI Lab, which is at the School of IT at Tallinn University of Technology, which was a lab that was focused on helping to boost the capacity or knowledge or expertise of the public sector with artificial intelligence. And so this is what the majority of my work has revolved around there.
All right. And you just mentioned it, you hold an MSc in e-governance technologies and services, which is quite specific, I would say, already heading towards that direction. Could you give us some insight into what you actually learned during your time in the...
Yeah, so the curricula itself was pretty interesting. Of course, being based in Estonia, you get access to a lot of sort of leading experts on this topic of digitalization, digital governance, digital government, you know, whichever you want to call it. It was more technologically focused, which is why it's an MSc. But there was also a good mix of courses from the public administration side of things, which is the department I ended up working for my PhD and for part of my master's. But the curriculum itself focused on, for example, learning software development, you know, Java, understanding databases, understanding, you know, government interoperability, how do data exchanges work, how do you work with archiving information, you know, business process reengineering, working with sort of different modeling languages, UML, all these different sorts of things. The whole point was that the people should understand, you know, digitalization, how to manage in the digital age, how to sort of have these technical conversations with people. If you're a project officer or a manager and you need to do some sort of technical procurement or technological development, it was more or less to boost your capacity with these sorts of skill sets. So cybersecurity as well, and you know, everything related, basically.
Right. Very interesting. And yeah, your PhD thesis was titled Open Government Data Co-Created Public Services. Could you explain our listeners a bit about your PhD thesis, why you decided to write about this topic, what the main arguments were, and maybe also the main findings?
Yeah, so as you said, my thesis had to do primarily with open government data and the co-creation of public services. This was primarily based around one European-funded Horizon 2020 project called Open Gov Intelligence, which was exactly on this topic. How do you use open data to co-create new public services? And I would say that the sort of, you know, general argumentation here is that open government data is pretty cool. Because, you know, before, when you have statistical information, you know, the process would be like the government would just release reports and say, for example, you know, if we're talking hypothetically, they might release a report about the number of pets in a city and say there's, you know, 17 dogs and 32 cats. And that was just all you had. But maybe you didn't care about dogs or cats, but you wanted to know about birds. But because it wasn't in the statistical report, you wouldn't know. But with open government data, it allows me to go and look and get the information that I need, ask the questions that I want to ask, and get the information that I want without having the sort of intermediate step of, you know, filing either a FOIA or waiting for the next report or going through this sort of long process of doing things. Another really cool advantage, at least in the US context, is open government data serves as sort of like an interoperability method. You know, organization A releases their data. Organization B can, you know, then use that data. This is how it works in the city of Chicago, for example, when we've talked with the Tom Schenk, who used to be one of the chief data officers there. This was his primarily primary focus on open government data. But anyways, what this all comes back to is that open government data creates new forms of participation and engagement with the sort of service creation and service delivery process, right? Because you have open government data, it becomes available, but on its own, it has no value. So you need to just do something with it. And this is where the co-creation aspect comes in. We sort of looked at how this process actually happens, discussed and wrote about this four-stage model that goes everywhere from sort of implementation and design and evaluation and these different sorts of steps. But the idea is that you have open government data. Anybody can work with it. Anybody can create a service on top of it. You can get stakeholders working together from different groups to sort of create services that provide value. So, I don't know, one case study was also from the city of Chicago, looked at how they used open government data to predict critical food safety violations in restaurants and food serving establishments. And this was a co-created public service that utilized input from stakeholders, from citizens and from public administrators and from the private sector. So what's quite cool, actually, they built it and they put all the code open source on GitHub. And then one citizen, for example, changed the model and said, hey, you're using this model right now, but if you use this one, you get X percentage performance boost. And then I think a few days later, somebody from the city was like, hey, thanks, we're going to check it out. And then a few days after that, they said, hey, thanks, you know, this is really good. We're going to integrate it. Your contribution, you know, is now playing a role in keeping, you know, this residents of Chicago safe from foodborne illness or something like that. It was really cool and showing how you can go from the availability of data to a bunch of stakeholders working together to the service that creates public value. And so this is what my thesis explored is, what is this process like? How do you do this? What is the role of open government data and sort of catalyzing all of this? What does this mean for our understanding of citizen participation, for service delivery, for, you know, all these different sorts of concepts?
Right. Fascinating. And we already mentioned this at the beginning. You're now working for the Hurdy School Center for Digital Governance. Two things I would be interested in at this point would be, on the one hand, what is your research focused on at the center? And on the other hand, I mean, you already mentioned it as like an American citizen. What brings you to Berlin, to Europe, to study these topics? Why not do it in the US, where I guess there's like more data available and also, yeah, like a, I don't know, more agile mentality towards these topics?
So I would have to say that right now I'm working, you know, I started in September of last year with the center, so I haven't been here a year yet. But one of my main focuses is simply on just bringing awareness to the center itself, to the sort of international community. I think that the Hurtie School has some of the world-leading experts on a number of topics, everything from governance to digital transformation to artificial intelligence to intelligence to data science. And we have some of the best minds in Europe at the Hurtie School, right? But not many people necessarily know who is there and what we're doing and that this center actually exists. So one thing that I have personally been doing is trying to just sort of build brand awareness about the Center for Digital Governance, that we exist, we're experts on this topic, and you know, making sure that everybody's working together and we can get the word out. So this is one thing. If I talk about my research specifically, I have a few different interests, so to say. One is, of course, related to open government data. So in this regard, I've been looking at different data portals in Germany and in Berlin itself, just trying to see what's out there, what works, what doesn't work, and sort of trying to gain a better understanding, you know, of the ecosystem. Right now, I'm helping to write some policy briefs that are about digital well-being and coronavirus, and looking at how digitalization, digital governance, digital public service delivery, digital transformation, all of these sort of interrelated concepts, you know, how do they affect societal well-being? How do they affect our own well-being? You know, does the availability of different digital services actually translate to a better quality of life? And exploring these different sorts of questions. Otherwise, I think if I had to sum it up or discuss it more succinctly, what I'm looking at is digital transformation in the public sector, but not taking the sort of technocentric approach that we must digitalize everything and that digitalization is inherently good, but asking, you know, are we doing it where it's effective? Are we doing it in such a way that it actually provides, you know, value? Is it making people's lives better? And trying to understand it from this perspective, which is a perspective that I think is not necessarily present enough in the current academic debate. And you asked me about why Berlin. One, as I said, just because the school is very good, we have many great experts. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm really excited to work with the people that I get to work with. But of course, Berlin is also, you know, everybody makes fun of Germany for not being so digitally advanced, and it's slow, and it has this, you know, long history of barbarian bureaucracy and all these different sorts of things. But I mean, that's the point. That's what's very interesting for me, because I come from sort of an antithetical state, right? I'm American originally, but I was in Estonia, where everything's digital, and they'd like to say they have no bureaucracy, which is not true. They have a lot of bureaucracy. They're still a state, all these different sorts of things. That's just a myth. But anyways, it's nice to come from one environment to sort of an opposite environment. Because I think that actually what would be interesting is to explore how you maintain this sort of barbarian state and history and context that Germany has and bring digitalization into it. Many people might say that this just needs to go and that digital will fix it and we'll get rid of the bureaucracy, we'll get rid of the hierarchy, we'll become agile, and then digital will just fix everything. But I don't think that's necessarily the best way to approach it. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing to do anyways. So what I'm really interested in is seeing how you can mesh digital within this, you know, context and history of this rich, you know, bureaucratic and barbarian public administration tradition.
All right, very interesting. I mean, then you're definitely in the right place to study this, I guess, in Germany. And you also co-authored a research paper titled "Hello World: Artificial Intelligence and Its Use in the Public Sector." So this is a very broad question, I know, but maybe just to give some insights to our listeners, what are the uses of artificial intelligence in the public sector? And maybe since you were already talking about it, where do you see some, the like positive potentials, and where do you see misleading or dangerous ways where artificial intelligence could be used in the public administration?
Okay. So this report was co-authored with a few of my colleagues at the OECD's Observatory for Public Sector Innovation. And my role in all of this was to write the sort of technical description. So how does AI work? What is AI? Basically, what is machine learning? Everybody talks about AI, but really what we're talking about is machine learning, which is really just mathematics and statistics at the end of the day. So I was just more or less describing this. To be honest, As I've said throughout this, even though I studied digital government, I studied digitalization, I studied these topics, I very much do not take this or look at this from this sort of technocentric viewpoint, which is quite common, I would say, within my domain. So what I am especially interested in is how do you procure AI? How do you regulate AI? How do you build the capacity within the public administration to do these different sorts of things? Right now, the private sector has a huge monopoly on the sort of artificial intelligence or machine learning type market because they have better salaries, they have more experience, they have better access to data, they have all these different sorts of things that the public sector doesn't have, which makes the public sector sort of dependent on the private sector for these sorts of services, which is why I'm really looking at exploring, how do you build up your internal capacity to do AI and machine learning? How do you ensure that you don't have vendor lock-in if you do sort of engage with certain vendors for these different sorts of things? For me, I think these are the more interesting issues, especially procurement. If you want to use artificial intelligence, first you need to procure it. But if you don't have the knowledge of what certain algorithms are, how these things work, what data you have in your organization, what data is required for this, where does the algorithm actually sit, who owns the data? There's all these different questions that you need to know. And you need to build this capacity, which is missing in many places. So this is what I'm mostly looking at. I think that there's a lot of hype and overselling about AI in the public sector. People like to think that, there was an article, this comes a lot in the Estonian context, but there was one article that talked about how AI would replace judges in small claims court, and there's all these different sorts of use cases. But I mean, to be honest, I think the majority of the artificial intelligence use cases in the public sector, you don't really hear about because they're not so cool to talk about. It's for example, if you have documents that you need to make public, you can use AI to remove personal information using text, like natural language processing or something like this. It's just about paperwork, which doesn't sound so interesting. If you talk to people, they want to hear about self-driving buses and they want to hear about all these different sorts of things. But we need to be more realistic and start with the basics before you jump way, you know, into something that you don't need to be playing with at the moment. So I'm concerned that there's a huge sort of pressure to do AI just because it's the thing. So people want to do AI just so they can do AI. But there are other things that need to be investigated first. You know, what one example that I give quite often when I'm talking to people, you know, we have a lot of debates about the sort of ethics of AI and making sure that AI is fair and not biased. And these are very important topics. Don't get me wrong, they should be investigated. They're very important. But if you can't even procure an AI system, for example, you know, it doesn't. There are things that are also important to pay attention to. And in the government context, people pay attention to the ethics, to all these different sorts of things, which they should. But if you can't procure it, you don't have the sort of knowledge to do it, it doesn't matter in one sense. So this is why I'm focusing more on yeah, procurement, internal capacities, and these topics, which sound boring, but are actually quite interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that like these topics are important and interesting anyways. I mean, they don't have to be clickbait or fancy in that regard, just for people to click on it on. And I don't know.
Let me just give one example, because I said I was going to, but I forgot. My friend's company wants they work with one governments that are monitoring fish populations in rivers. They have cameras that sit there, and they just need to count the number of fish. So they need an algorithm that says fish or no fish. That's it. They look at the picture, and they need to know if there's a fish in it or not. And if there is a fish, then they count it. So this is something that has a lot of funding behind it. It's very important. It's relevant for the sorts of sustainability and all these different sorts of things. But if you want to, you know, not every, so to say, machine learning algorithm has this sort of like human component or this ethical component. There are things there, but there's just a whole lot of different use cases. And that's why, yeah.
Keegan, thank you very much for your insights. It has been very interesting to talk to you. Sadly, we are running out of time. Maybe before you leave this conversation, could you tell our listeners and our audience where they can find you and your work and the center's work online?
Yeah, I have my own personal website, which is just my name, keeganmcbride.ee. And then we also have our own webpage for the Center for Digital Governance, which is just on the Hertie School main page. And you can navigate to our center from there. We have our LinkedIn profile, which we're very active in disseminating content on. And we would be more than happy to see you there and sign up to our mailing list. And so you can be informed about our events. We have every 2 weeks on Wednesday a digital governance colloquium where scholars and students and staff and visiting researchers are able to present their research on up-and-coming and important digital governance topics. And we have our blog, which is always bringing new research and insights from students and staff. And yes, we would be glad to have you there on our mailing list and following us on LinkedIn.
Keegan, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, make sure to rate our podcast on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to come on the show, you can contact me via Twitter @ForumGovTech. Until next time, Simon.